All right, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank everybody for listening and tuning in. I have the man himself, Tom Terwilliger. Did I pronounce that correct?
You did, actually, and quite surprisingly.
Fantastic. Tom is an athlete, entrepreneur, motivator, bodybuilder. The list is endless. So I want to get him on and talk to him about his life story, and obviously the product then that he has off the back end of this would be, it's called Max Mind Lean Body Program. And so I just want to kind of introduce people to Tom and what he's done. Can you elaborate a little bit more about where you're from, where it all began for you, sort of the good days, the bad days, and sort of where it sort of led to where you're at right now, Tom, and in a brief summary.
Sure, absolutely. First, let me thank you for having me on your show, man. I really appreciate it, Seamus. And I think, number one, you're doing some great stuff. You're adding and providing some really great value for your listeners, for your audience, for your mailing list. And anytime you can step outside the box and do something new, something different that allows people to absorb or receive information in different ways. I know you're writing, some of your writing is fantastic. The podcasting's really great, and I love that it's on video as well. I'm not so sure I look great on video. I think I have much more of a great radio voice than I do a video face, but we'll live with it. But I do want to congratulate you on the work you're doing, and also thank you for inviting me to join you and your audience today. I really do appreciate it, and it's really much, dare I say it, 86. It seems like a lifetime ago. Actually, it was several lifetimes ago. I was approached by another producer, and we wound up joint venturing on a project called Muscle Sport USA. Muscle Sport USA became the predominant bodybuilding, health, and fitness show of the 80s, 90s, well into the 2000s. We did the show for over 16 years, and I was here in Colorado covering an episode. We were covering the Colorado State Bodybuilding Championship, and quite frankly, I fell in love with two things that weekend. One was the Rocky Mountains. It is absolutely gorgeous out here. And New York is beautiful. I love it. I go back often as much as possible. It's my hometown. But Colorado just has this beauty, this natural landscape, the lakes, the mountains, the plains, the skiing, all of it, you know? And so I fell in love with it. And the second thing that happened was I met the woman who would soon, well, not soon enough, but soon become my wife. Her name is Dawn Terwilliger. In fact, we're partners on everything we do. We've created the High Achievers University. We created the Max Mind Lean Body Program, which we'll share more about later on together. We've done everything together along the way. We've had a radio show. We've done all sorts of things and all sorts of projects since. So it really has been not just a great marriage, but a great marriage in terms of partnership, business partnerships, and prosperity. So I'm truly grateful for that. So yeah, I moved here to Colorado for those two primary reasons. Left New York, where I had a few successful athletic clubs, and just decided to close those and move out here and make a new start of it. Yeah. Before that, however, was kind of interesting. And early on, when I was a youngster, I was not a good student. I was kind of a rebel. I had dyslexia and hyperactivity. Today we call it attention deficit disorder. Yeah. And that was really challenging for myself and my twin brother. I had an identical twin brother. And so we struggled in school. And as a result, we just got really rebellious. You know, we hated it. We didn't like authority. We didn't like the learning system. And we didn't like the fact that we were feeling dumb and less than. So we rebelled against that. One thing led to another. Ultimately, it was not a good ending going into high school. I dropped out. I got my first Harley Davidson that same year. That year, I started riding that Harley Davidson. I was only 17 years old, started riding with some outlaw bikers, and just really went down the wrong path. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because I was on the right path for the first time in my young life before that. Even though things ultimately came to a head in terms of my own disempowering beliefs about myself, because that's really how it all manifested. Being bad in school, ultimately being, you know, dropping out of high school, getting in a fight with a gym teacher, all of that was a manifestation of my disbelief in myself. Becoming an outlaw biker was a disbelief in myself, that I wasn't good enough, that I wasn't smart enough that I couldn't make it. So I had to be like this one percenter, you might say, you know? So all of that, you know, I started to take a back seat for a very short while in high school. And it was bodybuilding. And I know a lot of your listeners lift weights and train, do CrossFit. It was bodybuilding, really, weightlifting, that sort of turned the tides for me for a few years. So in high school, I started working out, started lifting, started working out with a bunch of guys in my basement. We created this home basement, a lot like what people are doing today right now with this coronavirus thing going on. We started working out in the basement, started making equipment. You know, just we wound up with, somebody had some dumbbells, somebody had some barbells. We wound up making a pull-down machine, making a bench out of a picnic bench. We put a blanket on it. We did our bench presses on the picnic bench and started to see some progress. And I literally fell in love with it. I mean, it was like the first time I touched that metal. It was like something changed, something resonated that was positive instead of all the negative that I had been experiencing in my life up to that point. Mm-hmm. And so I started bodybuilding and I joined a gym called Future Man. And Future Man was the predominant bodybuilding gym on Long Island. Some of the top guys, Mr. America, Mr. World, there was a Mr. Universe training there. I mean, some really great guys. I walked into that gym at 16 or 15 years old. I don't know if anyone's ever been more intimidated in their entire life than I was. It took me 20 minutes standing outside, scraping the steam off the window, looking in. So he's like, do I even want to go in there? Oh my God. All I could hear was screaming and yelling and weights and clanking and banging in there. That's all I could hear coming, resonating from the place, right? Yeah. I'm not even sure. I don't even remember if they had a music going or not. And so I finally had the courage to go in. And that began that journey. And for the next 3 years, I was fortunate to be mentored by a great coach. Tony Pandolfo was also a champion bodybuilder himself at the time. And I wound up getting coached and really taking a good direction at that point. But then what happened is that old disempowering belief began to intrude again.
Yeah.
And I started to lose this. And this is something maybe some of your listeners can relate to, because we've all had this experience, I think, a time or two in our lives where we make a decision. Mm-hmm. Something comes along and helps make that decision for us, where I could be doing more. I could be doing better. I could be living bigger. I can be accomplishing more. I'm better than this.
Yes.
And we take some action. And so for me in high school, that action was lifting weights. I had this belief that I could be more than what I'm doing. Why am I a hoople? Why am I a rebel? What's going on here? And I just decided that, hey, this is a good path. But unfortunately, those beliefs, those disempowering beliefs, were so deeply embedded at that time that as soon as I started to make this shift from, let's call it rebel, mm-hmm. Young rebel, of course, but let's call it rebel, to becoming a champion, then all of a sudden the inner thoughts started to come into play and say, no, you're not that guy. You're not a champion. You're not a hero. You're not that guy that should be in the magazines. You're this guy. Mm-hmm. So I wound up getting in a fight with a gym teacher, getting almost kicked out, deciding, hey, I'm leaving high school, I'm done. I got a Harley Davidson, and that was the bad path for the next 5 years.
Wow.
Then it was bodybuilding once again that saved me.
Yeah.
That took me off that path and directed me in the right direction. And at that time, then it was like there were more tools. There were more resources available to help change the mindset, you might say.
Like what?
Go ahead.
Like what? What tools were available then the second time around? What kind of things is?
Well, the primary tool was picking up a book. My first book at that time that led me towards this personal growth and development process, this path, you know, that was available, but I didn't know. You know, in high school, you didn't know. Speaking of a book in high school, I hated books. I hated studying. I hated homework. I hated all that stuff. So the idea of picking up a book that had something to do with changing your mindset and growing internally was like outside my scope.
Yes.
It was like the Native American Indians who couldn't even see Columbus's ships coming across the horizon because it was so far out there, you know, in terms of their belief system. It wasn't even an available resource at the time, even though it was there.
Yeah.
So later on, after I decided that this biker lifestyle was no longer for me, this is not the path I should be on, and it was a sort of a radical experience that happened as a result of that, that helped facilitate that decision. Mm-hmm. It was now time to say, okay, if that's not it, if this is not what I'm going to do, if this is not who I'm going to be, then what is? So then I started searching for research, started searching for answers, you might say. You know, and so one of the first books that I read on the subject of personal development that really created a shift was one by Dr. Maxwell Maltz called Psycho-Cybernetics. And I don't know if you've heard of it or read it, but it has since, I mean, it was written actually in the 50s. So I read it in, you know, I guess it was like the late 70s or so, or early 70s that I read this book for the first time and began to see what was really taking place on an unconscious level. In fact, it was really the first time I began to understand that there was an unconscious at all. Mm-hmm. And that unconscious is what's steering the ship much more than the conscious desire to be more, do more, or have more, experience more. But that's what was really dictating the direction that anyone goes in, certainly for me. So once I became aware of that, I also became aware of how that was manifesting. How is it showing up? What am I saying to myself? What am I doing? What are my actions? And then also Maxwell Maltz provided some visualization techniques and strategies that began to help me go into that relaxed state and begin implanting new ideas, new thoughts, new visions, an actual new future, you might say. Mm-hmm. And as he calls it, it was programming the internal guidance system to not just go where it's been determined I'm supposed to go from an early age or bad experience or trauma, but rather programming that internal guidance system to go now where I want it to go, where I believe it should direct, where I believe it should end up. So that book, those resources, that one, and then it was a year or two later, I began reading Tony Robbins' Awaken the Giant Within, and then I just immersed myself in as much information as possible, as much reading, as many audio programs as I could possibly get my hands on. Yeah. Because at that time, now I began to really, truly believe that maybe, just maybe, I could be a champion. You know, that first day I told you about walking into Future Man Gym.
Yeah.
As that 15-year-old kid. And, you know, being intimidated. Well, the intimidation got even greater the moment I walked in. Because I walked into a photo shoot and when this guy, his name, he was a Mr. America, Steve Mihalik. And when Steve Mihalik was training or doing photo shoots, he didn't just like fake it. He was crazy. He was known for his intensity. He was he became legendary. Him and a guy named John Defenders, who became a very dear friend of mine, Mr. USA, they had articles written called Intensity or Insanity, you know? So here I am. I walk in. This Mr. America in this ripped up, beat up old tank top. I mean, the guy was like, it looked filthy. I mean, it looked like he trained in it and never washed the thing, right? This was back old school days, you know, back in the 70s. And he was huge. Absolutely. I mean, I walked in. I was like, how is it possible that a human being could possibly look like that? And here he is getting his photos taken, but he's working out for real. And he's crushing it. And he's yelling and screaming, pumping that iron. Everyone's clearing the field. Get out of his way. He's maniac. He's nuts. And I was like, I just stood there looking, watching. And I said to myself, at some point, when I got back on my bicycle and started riding home, it was about a 3-mile ride, I made a decision that I wanted to be Mr. America. That's what I wanted to do. That's who I wanted to be. So that idea, that goal was implanted way early on, even before I began bodybuilding as a teenager. Unfortunately, it didn't take hold enough because I didn't have the strategies. I didn't have the techniques. I didn't have the tactics needed to implant that goal deep enough into my unconscious mind that it began programming that internal success mechanism. So that's why I was derailed very easily later on, a few years later. Mm-hmm. But now, coming back in my 20s, I had more resources, more tools. So the idea, that goal, that objective, become Mr. America, that's who I want to be, that's who I am, began to really take hold. And the visualization process was all around, who is this Mr. America? Who is Tom Terwilliger as Mr. America? How does he speak? How does he act? How does he react with people? How does he eat? How does he train? The whole picture began becoming clear to me. Mm-hmm. And that's what guided the process for the next several years, ultimately to winning the National Bodybuilding Championship and becoming Mr. America. It was pretty cool, man, when I think about it.
unreal. Like I would be the same. I didn't really start reading. I didn't like books and stuff. I like see as far as my 20s, I didn't start reading self-development and stuff like that until my sort of mid-20s. And it's funny how you just want to absorb as much as you want, yes, as much as you can. Then you feel like, well, I felt maybe that I was maybe behind. You know, this is all this information makes so much sense, and you know, I have so much to do and so much I want to accomplish. But I've heard of psycho-cybernetics. I've never actually read it. But there was a couple other books that you had noticed, and you said Waking the Giant Within and Think and Grow Rich, and Every Man's a King was another book as well. I think you
right. Yep. Ebert Hubbard was an interesting character. He wrote Every Man a King, and it's interesting. I have that on my shelf somewhere. Oh yeah, here it is. Let me grab it real quick.
Yeah,
this is. I found this book some years later in a. I mean, look at this. Look at how old this is.
Yeah,
right? Like, I mean, this is like
Harry ancient. Potter.
This is how far back. This was written in like the late 1800s. This is or the early 1900s. I mean, look at these pages. This is, oh, it's falling apart. There's a picture of Ebert Hubbard himself right there. Wow. So, I mean, it is just, when I came across this book, it was in a, like a used, I don't know, like an antique store or something. Yeah. It was in a box with a whole bunch of other books. And I was like, wait a minute, this is cool. I started reading some of it. I'm like, holy mackerel. This stuff, the idea of personal development, of understanding the unconscious, of understanding how we move towards what's been programmed into us through our default modes and our experiences and our traumas and our belief system goes back, you know, decades and decades, yeah, and decades. So this was one, yes. Certainly Napoleon Hill, Tony Robbins, so many others. And like you said, Seamus, once your eyes are opened to this kind of thing, that this is a possibility, that this exists, that we can actually change. Mm-hmm. And this is long before we really understood the idea of brain plasticity.
Yeah.
We just knew that if we could change our thoughts, we could change our direction, right? Now we know it's actually plastic. We can create real dynamic plastic changes in the brain that can almost remanufacture our personalities, our goals and objectives, and our ability to achieve them. So you're right, man. Once you start down this path, it consumes you a little bit in terms of wanting more, doesn't it?
Yeah, for sure. And do you think, like, it's not something that you would actually, it takes time to develop that, you know, like that thought for you back whenever that first time you went into the gym, people might think, oh, they're going to read one book and then they're going to accomplish everything. Some people might think that. The other people might think, oh, I've read this one book and nothing's really happened. You know, there's so many ways that, like, it takes time and it takes work. It takes consistency, just like your training. So
well, that's a great example. It's exactly like that. I mean, training the brain is exactly like training the body, isn't it?
And I was just going to ask you, which do you think, like, I always, like, the training clients, like, you talk about training, you talk about nutrition. More so, more recently, I'd be thinking, to have a longer, more impact on a client, mindset's probably the major one that I would need to be working on to kind of help with goals and things. Immediately, you're going to get that release of endorphins with exercise and stuff, but right. I would always offer people books to read and stuff to kind of develop that mindset. But again, you can bring a horse to the water, but making a drink's another thing. And you know, so I don't know, what's your thought? Which would you sort of look at as being the most impactful? Would you sort of sit down with someone and say, work on your mindset first, or would you kind of, or do you think it's the whole package, or what's?
Well, that's a really, really great question. And I used to believe that, you know, working on the mindset is number one. And indeed it is. However, most people are resistant to this approach. Most people don't understand that it's the mindset, it's the way they think, their emotions. I mean, if we look at the process of manifestation, right? If we want to manifest a goal, an objective, whatever it might be, it begins with our beliefs, our thoughts, our actions and then our results, right? So if you look down that line, beliefs and thoughts, emotions, that's all part of our internal world. Mm-hmm. So shouldn't we be working on our internal world before we try to manifest something on the external world?
Yeah.
Which is absolutely true. Yes, we should. But most people are resistant to that. And this is something, honest to God, I didn't really understand this fully until I started working with one of the great trainers in personal development, a guy named Harv Eker. And Harv wrote The Secrets of the Millionaire Mind. And I started working with him as a trainer. And when I say trainer, he had a company called Peak Potentials. And Peak Potentials rivaled Tony Robbins. This was, I worked with him about 10 years ago. And so his objective was get people in to a training program, get them in the door, you might say, or open up their mind to the possibility of change through what it is that they believe they need right now. So Secrets of the Millionaire Mind was all about that. What people heard was millionaire, millionaire, millionaire. I want to earn more money. I want to have more wealth. I'm tired of struggling. I'm tired of being broke. So the book was a bestseller, but the trainings, which was like very impactful, it went deep. Once people got into that room, yes, he delivered what they anticipated. How do we ultimately create more wealth and more abundance in our lives? But really, it began with the mindset. Mm-hmm. So his trainings were all about mindset. And so ultimately, that's where I learned it. That's where I had that aha moment. It's like, huh, I've been trying to convince people that they need to shift their mindset. They can't hear it. They don't hear it. What they hear is, hey, you know what? I could show you some strategies for losing that gut or that butt or getting in better shape or having more energy. Because that's the conversation that's going on in most people's minds. Most people's minds are saying, I wish I had more energy. I just can't do what I need to do. They look in the mirror, they're disappointed, I'm frustrated, I'm discouraged. If you say, hey, you know what? You look in the mirror, you're frustrated and discouraged. You know what you need to do? You need to change this right here. They get it. They understand it. Yeah. They appreciate it. But what they need right now in this moment is something that's more actionable. Yeah, I know that. And I'm working. I'm kind of working on it. I understand that. But isn't there like a new sit-up or a new crunch or a new diet or a new something that I could do right now to kind of like trim this waist down?
Yeah.
So you see what I mean? In terms of, yes, I agree with you 100%. Mindset is key. But getting somebody into the room, you might say, or into the space, or into a desire to really create change, we have to approach it from a slightly different direction. And then infiltrate their consciousness with the rest of it, which is the mindset training. And I know that that you're a fan of our Max Mind Lean Body product, which is this over 40 solution, we call it, but it's a solution for anyone. I hate to reveal the real secret to the Max Mind Lean Body program, but that's it. We want people to understand that this is a powerful training program for the body and for nutrition. And if you do nothing else, you wind up losing some weight. However, what's buried, what's internalized in the program, every step of the way is designed to create a shift in the mindset, in the belief system, in the way we think. So that then, once we put the strategies in terms of the workouts and the nutrition program into action, now we're really ready for change. Because most people will never change unless they're ready for change. I wasn't 100% ready for change as a teenager. I just wasn't ready. In fact, I was ready for something else. I was ready to be an outlaw biker. But when I was ready, that's when the mindset had to start shifting. I don't know if that's been your experience with your clients. How do you approach it?
100%. It's like there's people who may have come to train for me for maybe 12 months to a year, and they may see small progressions. Maybe it's the accountability. They want to have an appointment to come to the gym at a certain time. Their goals, and I think a lot of the time, you said it, their beliefs. Maybe they say, oh, what's the next best thing? What's the best diet? What's this? But that's a distraction nearly. It's internally they're telling you this, and really they don't have the belief in themselves that they can do it.
No, you hit it. You hit it on the nose. It's a lot. They probably wouldn't be struggling and seeking help if they had a full 100% belief in themselves that they could do it. So they're looking for a solution, and it's that's human nature. It's human psychology. Yeah. It's what we do. Mm-hmm. I've done it for you. I still do it. I still say, well, you know, hey, you know, in terms of my marketing, you know, what is there, you know, instead of saying, I need to become a marketer, I need to know the psychology. I need to become that. That's who I need to be. And part of my challenge with that is that early on, even when I had my gyms, and people said, you need to do more marketing. I'm not a marketer. That's not my thing. It's not what I do. So I still have this internal belief that I'm not a marketer.
Yes.
And yet I need to market, right?
Yeah.
Same thing with your stuff as well. If you're going to reach more people, have a greater impact, you've got to become a marketer. Mm-hmm. And for someone to lose weight, to be healthy, to really engage in fitness at the highest level, they need to become that inside, you know, and then employ the strategies. But it's difficult to do that. Like you said, you have to kind of come around the back door, you might say.
Yeah.
You know?
You mentioned your program there. How do you break it down? Do you do it a day on this week? You do this task and that's all you do, or how do you sort of start making the mold for people who are joining the program? How do you do that?
Well, the first thing we do is we introduce them to it, just like you and I were introduced mm-hmm. to. Hey, you know what? This makes sense. We introduce them to an idea that. Wait a second. Here's and it's very covert, you might say. You know, we talk about old school methods, and we talk about what works, what doesn't work, and in there we have this mindset component where we start to talk about shaping the brain and how our beliefs start to create our reality for the most part. And so introducing it a little bit in small chunks,
yeah,
makes people much more receptive to it. And that's what we do in the program. Because every inch of the way is all designed, but if we try and throw it at them like too much at one time,
yeah,
like here's an entire chapter, the very first chapter, because it really should be the first chapter. The very first chapter is all about mindset, changing your mindset. You know, it's just too much almost, right? Mm-hmm. So we introduce it in little chunks, and those chunks get bigger and bigger and bigger along the way. So to answer your question, yes, there are daily tasks. Max Mind Lean Body is really all about chunking down. So we've got this big picture. I want to be this. I want to be that. I want to be in shape. I want to lose weight. I want to have more energy. I want to look younger, right? All these things. But we got to chunk that down into smaller daily actions that become habits. Because those actions ultimately, listen, it's our, you know, I talked about this, the beliefs, the thoughts, the feelings, the actions mm-hmm. and results in terms of this process of manifestation. If you think about it, beliefs, thoughts, feelings are all inside, right? I mean, that's where much of the change has to start to take place.
Yeah.
But you can do it a couple different ways. You can do it through meditation. You can hypnosis. You can do it through visualization, or you can do it through daily practice, or all those things. So Max Mind Lean Body is all about daily practice. So if we look at that, the bridge between the beliefs, thoughts, feelings, and the results, action is the bridge. So if you can get people to take those daily actions that are start small, but start to shape not only what they're doing physically, but also what they're starting to believe. I call it the do then believe model. Once you do something, maybe they can't lift 100 pounds. And 100 pounds sounds like, oh my God, that's insurmountable. I don't think I could lift 100 pounds. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you get them close to it and you say, you know what? You can lift 100 pounds. And then one day, all of a sudden, you know, they're getting close and then you sneak a couple pounds on. And then, you know, all of a sudden it's 100 pounds. They do it. And then you tell them, hey, guess what you just did? 100-pound bench press. And you did it more than once. You did it three times.
Yeah.
Now the belief process. Now it's like, holy crap.
Yeah.
Do then believe. Action is the bridge between the internal world and the external world, the results. So that's what Max Mind Lean Body does, to answer your question with a long-winded answer. Okay. My apologies.
Okay. No, that's okay.
Is small daily actions intertwined with small introductions into the idea that it's the mindset, it's the belief system that's gotten them where they are today. Mm-hmm. And if they want to be somewhere else, then we need to start talking about introducing, doing some work around the mindset and the belief systems along the way. They've been introduced now. A little bit later on in the programs, we do some things that really start to challenge them in creating and manifesting that new belief system. So yeah, you're absolutely right. It's small incremental tools, small incremental introductions instead of forcing it on someone. with that may not be ready just yet, or has downloaded or purchased Maximizing Lean Body or has purchased training from you because they want to lose weight, and now we're shoving this mindset thing down their throat. Within the first 10 minutes, they're like, this isn't what I expected. It's not what I want.
Yes. And it never ends.
And you got someone who you can't help now.
Excellent. You know? Excellent. Fantastic. I don't know. My internet connection's dropping in and out there, so I don't know if it's going to record the whole way through, but I think we got...
I think you may have froze.
Yeah. So the other thing... I don't know if you can still hear me. My internet connection is unstable, so apologies for that.
No problem. We're all a little unstable at the moment, so don't worry. we live in a very unstable world right now, so the internet is no surprise, man.
It's crazy.
I'm with you. I'm not going anywhere.
The other side I want to talk about is the training side. Obviously, you started bodybuilding a long time ago. Has your training methods changed? Has your, your programming techniques?
Right now, okay. Are we good? Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Yeah. I can hear you.
You're breaking up a little bit. I think you're good now. Let's try it.
That's right. I don't know if you got that, but what I was asking is you've been training a long time. How has your training developed, your programming changed, stuff like that, and how do you incorporate that now in the actual Max Mind lean body programming and stuff? You know, because obviously there is strength training techniques, your squat, bench, deadlift, big compound exercise is going to give you a big bang for your buck, obviously improve your muscle mass, stuff like that. Like, again, you're going to give us more depth here, but like, what have you seen change? And you obviously, after a while as well, you have to look after your body. You can't pound it all the time as well to keep yourself looking good. So how has it changed and all for yourself?
Well, that's a great question, because it does change a little bit. We have to evolve. I'm not a big believer that we need to, you know, as we age, I'm in my 60s now, and it's just like, hey, you know what? I still train. Well, I'm going to take that back. I was about to say I still train as hard as I ever have. But when I was training for the Mr. Olympia or the National Bodybuilding Championship, it was ridiculous in terms of the intensity, the frequency, the duration of the workouts were absolutely just you know, it's ridiculous. You couldn't do it. The average person could not do that on a daily basis. And even a Mr. Olympia competitive athlete can only do that for a short period of time. Mm-hmm. You know, 8-12 weeks or so during contest preparation. So I don't train as hard as I used to, but I still train quite hard. And I have a training partner who I've always been a big believer. There's a great picture that I would put on Facebook, and it's gotten around. It's pretty popular, of my wife Dawn spotting me on a set of curls. And this was only taken a few years ago for Ironman magazine. And so she's spotting me on a set of curls, and I said, find someone who will kick your ass and invite them in. And and that's what I expect from my training partner. My training partner, Mike, is he's great, and he still pushes me. We don't have conversations. We get into the gym. We say hello. We ask how we're doing. How you doing? How you doing? Good, good. How's your back? Good. Everything's good. Let's go. And it's not, I mean, honest to God, I call him one of my dearest friends. However, I don't know a lot of what's going on in his life, because we don't have a lot of time to spend chatting about those things. We train. That's it.
Yeah.
We get in, we do an hour. It's high intensity. Now, that high intensity has changed a little bit. It's evolved a little. Still squat. We still deadlift. We just don't do those things as heavy.
Yeah.
So what we'll do is we'll do them slower. We'll do them with a superset, meaning we'll pre-exhaust the legs, the quads, with a leg extension, for example. And of course, I'm just referring to my strength training right now. I do other training as well, but
yeah,
the strength training has evolved. And I do more supersets, giant sets. I do a lot of high rep stuff. High rep for me is, you know, anywhere between 15 and 50 reps. But we also do a program once a year where we do 100 reps per exercise. And that shocks the body. It kind of keeps it awake. It keeps it alert. It doesn't know what to expect. So I still train quite the same. It's about an hour, 50 minutes to an hour. I do find, and there's some studies about this, I'm sure you know this as well, Seamus, but maybe your listeners aren't as familiar with, that if you're training at high levels of intensity, For more than about 50 minutes or so. And I'm talking about pretty high levels of intensity consistently, not taking a 10-minute water break, but consistently for about 50 minutes or so. After that, what happens is it's the law of diminishing returns. So the testosterone level, your elevated testosterone, high-intensity training and strength training, especially squats, deadlifts, naturally elevates our testosterone levels, men and women, regardless of age. That kind of training has that kind of endocrine response. However, after about 50 minutes, it's the law of diminishing returns. That means the testosterone levels start to come down, start to diminish rapidly, which actually lowers or reduces our ability to recover post-workout. So I try and keep the workouts under 60 minutes, pretty high intensity for the most part. And what I do is I think one of the major changes for me, Seamus, and I think for anyone over 40, over 50, into their 60s or so, are still training hard, is listening to the body. I have another program. It's a coaching program called Experience the Leap. And the leap is really all about, it's not about getting your vertical jump up. It's about taking a leap in your life, a leap of faith, moving from where you are to where you want to be, ultimately, consciously taking that leap. And the first part of the leap process is body rapport, I call it. And body rapport is to know, like, and trust your body. When I was bodybuilding, like an NFL athlete or any athlete that trains, you know, to perform at optimum levels on the field against intense competition, has to sort of almost ignore the rapport with their body. Their body is telling them to stop, slow down, rest, recover, you're injured. They have to ignore it. When I was training for the Olympia one time, I had a torn rotator cuff. It was pretty bad. I had to continue to train. I wasn't backing out of the competition. And so I modified my training as a result of it. I changed a few things. I trained smarter, but I still trained. So in essence, what I was doing, I was telling my body, shut up. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear you're injured. I don't want to hear you have to slow down. I don't want to hear you're tired. I don't give a shit. I was like the worst I was like my own worst training partner.
Yes.
I told my body to shut up. And that is not rapport with your body.
Yeah.
There's several different levels to this rapport component. But the rapport that I'm talking about right now, that has changed for me in terms of my training, is I listen to the body. If I go in and we're scheduled to do heavy deadlifts that day and my back is stiff or tight, or maybe I feel a little bit from my martial arts training the day before, I'm either going lighter or I'm using dumbbells. There's some modified way of doing it. I can go lighter, I can use dumbbells, I can use the Smith machine. I could decide not to do them at all. I don't feel like there's any huge loss at the moment from not doing deadlifts today. I'll do them again next week.
Yes.
Squats, same thing, especially those heavy movements, you know?
Yeah.
So I listen to the body, and I call it body rapport, to know, like, and trust my body. But, you know, I mean, and there are three ways your body starts to send signals to you. First, it whispered, hey, you know what? Your back's a little tight today. You might have strained it a little, right? It's something whispered at you. It's like a lover. If it wants to get your attention, first thing it does is whisper. Then it starts to shout, hey, that back, man. Are you forgetting about that back? Holy crap. You can't be doing deadlifts today. Back it off. Slow it down. It starts to yell, right? The whisper, the shout, and then what happens? It's either the slap in the face or the kick to the balls.
Yeah.
Take your choice. It's your choice. But at some point, after it whispers enough at you, after it shouts enough at you, it will kick you in the balls and tell you, see, I told you. You shouldn't have done those deadlifts today. I don't want to get to that point anymore. When I was younger, in my 20s, bodybuilding and training for the Olympia, you know, it was like, I don't care. Bury me massive. Now it's like, hey, you know what? I want to live a few more years and I want to be healthy and I want to enjoy life. I still want to be in shape. So I have to listen to the body. So that's really kind of how I've really changed my training. It's about 3, sometimes 4 days a week. I couple that with 2 days a week of martial arts training. I do some mixed martial arts as well. And even that, I've had to, you know, back it off a little bit in terms of the kicks and punch that I absorb with the focus mitts and things. I've had to back off. I had a rotator cuff tear just 2 years ago from holding focus mitts for a couple of crazy 20-year-olds like you who just decided, you know what, bam, 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 I'm going to hit it hard, man. Well, guess what? That's your shoulder. And it didn't want to tolerate it. So I've slowed that down a little bit as well.
Is there anything you do to aid recovery then with injuries and even just from your day-to-day training? do you focus a lot on the nutrition side of things? Do you use other things like infrared or the salt baths, or, you know, is there any other methods that you would use to kind of aid recovery? Or
I've used infrared. I don't use it on a consistent basis. I love it, though. I think if you've got access to it, can afford to do it, without question, there's just too much scientific evidence right now that are showing its benefits, including anti-aging benefits as well, and strengthening the immune system. So I would definitely say that's one. I don't do much with hot tubs or cold, you know, plunges. I just don't have access. And, you know, I'll do ice, even though that has that therapy has changed a little bit in terms of what's the appropriate measures in doing that. I do have a personal laser. I'll use my laser on anything that I feel like, hey, you know what? This is starting to get a little strained. That rotator cuff injury I mentioned and I had a couple of years ago, it's never been repaired. I decided not to repair it. I believe that the invasive aspect of the repair, it was a complete rupture of the subscapula, would have been too invasive and actually set me back further. So I've learned to work around it, and I use the laser around that shoulder and on my knee, which gives me a little bit of trouble, not much, it's just wear and tear. So I use that for a speedier recovery as well. The nutrition aspect is really, I think, one of the keys, you know? And I've always been a big proponent of following the workout and getting to what I call ground zero. Let's just say I work my biceps or my legs, whatever it might be, ground zero where the attack took place, where the breakdown, where the catabolic aspects of the muscles are taking place at the moment, getting those important nutrients, the branched chain amino acids, some glutamine, creatine, a little protein, which takes a little longer to get to ground zero. But immediately, for about 20 minutes after the workout, has always been a practice of mine. And certainly sleep. Sleep is so, I mean, we know it. We know about it. But it's one of those things that's underestimated. And when it is underestimated, we feel the impact. I do. Yeah. I definitely do. I have to get, it's rare that I get much more than 7 hours. Try and get 8 on the weekends. But keeping a consistent time where I go to bed, consistent time when I get up, makes all the difference in the world in terms of keeping those circadian rhythms functioning optimally. So that, and mitigating stress as much as possible. There's so many, it is interesting, Seamus, that, and my wife and I are big right now. I mean, our primary study is around slowing the aging process, anti-aging. We're big into DNA evaluation, peptides, hormones, all these different approaches. However, all these little things, even the red light therapy and some of these other things that athletes can do, each one of them, you might say, let me see if I can do this. It's sort of like, okay, this much more recovery, this much more, this much more. You stack everything you can do to speed up recovery and you get about this. Now, if you sleep, you get this. If you eat right all the time, you get this. If you train sensibly, allow your body to recover post-exercise, you get this. Right? So all these things wind up being this. All the other things add about that much or so. Now, if you can get all this and this, fantastic. But if all you're getting is this and you're ignoring these other components, you're missing the big picture.
Yeah.
That's where most of the recovery comes from. That's where most of the anti-aging properties come from. That's where most of the muscle building properties come from, is the big picture. And you know, I mentioned post-workout recovery and maximizing lean body. One of the things we do that is a definite differentiator from a lot of programs is we emphasize post-workout recovery. And we do that with a meditation. I've studied Qigong and Kung Fu for several years, and we incorporate a Qigong meditation into the program. So as soon as you finish the workout, whether it's a half hour, 45 minutes, or you decide to extend it to a full hour, the need for recovery is immediate. It's immediate. And here's what happens, Seamus, and you know this with your clients, right? A lot of times what happens is we're stressed out. We got our job, we got our families, we got our relationships, we got our finances, we got all these things that sort of add challenges and stresses, especially right now. We got more challenges than ever before, right? So we get in the car, we look at, oh shit, I'm late for my workout, I gotta get going, I forgot my bag, whatever number of other things that stresses out. We get to the gym, we rush, we get in the locker room, we get changed, we get out, we get our working in, which is a cortisol pumping workout. We've already got all these catabolic hormones pumping into our body as a result of the workout. Good stuff, elevated testosterone. But now, okay, we're done. Now we got to rush, get back in the locker room, change the clothes, get back in the car, get back in the fucking traffic. And I'm running late for my job, running late for my appointment, whatever it might be. When does your body have an opportunity to settle down, to take that racing 10,000 RPM engine down to a neutral level? When? It almost never happens.
No.
So what we've done is we built that into the program where you've got 10, 15 minutes built into the program where you take the time, whether it's in your car, whether you go sit on the toilet, in the bathroom, wherever it is, I don't care. Go find a quiet place in the gym and you go into a relaxed state. And we teach this meditation. It's a very quick, relaxing meditation that takes that RPM engine down to neutral, down to coasting. And now you go in, you're back, you change, you're back in your car, you're in a relaxed state. And 75% of your recovery following that workout has already taken place. Now it's just the next 24 to 48 hours that's going to be required in good nutrition, good sleep, keeping yourself as relaxed as possible, that's going to contribute to that other 25%. But when you do that, when you relax afterwards, and this is something I learned as a bodybuilder, that after high intense, especially legs, Seamus, I mean, you're a leg workout. It's like, holy crap, man, you're dying, right? So I would go, I would find a quiet spot in the gym, I'd throw a towel over my face, and I would lay there for 20 or 30 minutes or so until I felt like my body was ready to get up. Mm-hmm. I was relaxed. I had done a little meditation. I may have even fallen asleep, but my body's relaxed. And I tell you, man, that was like, it is like a shot of growth hormone. Yeah. It's unbelievable what that does, man. Crazy.
It's actually, people could turn around and say, I have to rush. I have to go. I have to do, you know, you have to make the time to do this sort of thing. Everything, as you said, like it's a full package, but I feel like I read a book called The Miracle Morning, and there was five steps you had to do in the morning, and all it was 3 minutes. You know, anybody can do 3 minutes, you know, and that's 15 minutes at the end of the day. And upon there, you just grow on it. You may spend a little bit more time in different areas because maybe you'd like to do that a little bit more. And you know, it was reading, it was journaling, it was exercise and meditation. And visualization and stuff was the 5 different things. So, but I obviously getting up earlier, you spend a little bit more time maybe on the meditation and sitting somewhere quiet. And sometimes I do it lying down in bed. Sometimes I get up, sit on a chair, and I'm sitting with a coffee, but I'm sitting there with my eyes closed. It's in that relaxed state, and I'm there alone. I like the quiet. I like to take the time and be in a quiet place. So
that's smart. And I'll tell you, it's interesting because a lot of times people who meditate, and I used to do visualization laying down, and I did a very specific techniques where each body part started to become heavier and heavier and heavier and drop into whatever mattress or floor I was on. It was really an interesting process. And it taught me to connect with my body parts a little bit better. But really meditating laying down is not the best idea anyway, because most of us wind up falling asleep. After the workout, that's fine. But just sitting up and relaxing, you're less likely to fall asleep. One other recommendation I have for a seated meditation is try and have your back against something. It doesn't have to necessarily be leaning heavily against it. Mm-hmm. But something that adds, I think there's something in all of our unconscious is sort of like an innate, you know, this idea that we're vulnerable. If our back is exposed, we tend to feel vulnerable. And therefore we have this level of, unconscious threat that we're dealing with while we're trying to relax. So if you can put your back up against a wall or a bench or against, you know, whatever it might be for you that kind of makes you feel a little bit safer, a little more secure. I think it's a good way to help the mind relax and eliminate any unconscious threat that might have otherwise interrupted the process in some way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of different scenarios going through my head, and it's great us talking about this now, but I could sort of see a lady at home with 3 kids running around, or, you know, a dad as well. You know, there's so many scenarios, but it's I think it's just dealing with those things, and then again, just finding that 5-10 minutes, maybe doing it together as a couple, if it's a husband and wife, or, you know, but it's, you gotta put in a wee bit of effort and time to get the benefits out of it. Like,
you know, it's interesting. I just want to point something out. I remember, cause my dad, worked like overtime constantly. He had 6 kids. I was the youngest of 6 kids. Mm. And my house was always chaos. It was always chaos, right? And so my dad, I remember he would go out to the car when he was like ready to lose it.
Yes.
Which was the occasional day. And he's just like ready to lose it. He would go out there. We'd be like, Where's dad? And we were just like, what? And then we'd look outside. And sure enough, he would just sit in the car and calm down. He had his own way of meditating, and maybe it was prayer. Maybe he was smoking a cigarette. I don't know. All I know is he would go out to the car. So you can always find, even if it's a couple minutes, right?
Yes.
Just to cool your head, man.
That's a great example. That's a great example. Is there any major expectation?
James!
Hello.
Hey, buddy.
I'm thinking about changing locations here. I don't know if I'm too far away from my router. Was gonna say,
I thought I'd just hang out, wait for you, man.
That's awesome. I really appreciate that. Hold on, one moment there.
No problem at all.
My God, closer to the rotor in here. So
yeah, it can be frustrating. I've done, you know, like a lot of events where all of a sudden we've got technical problems. A lot of times people don't see it, but it happens, you know, just moments before.
Yeah.
They have no idea the shit has hit the fan, and now we're all calm and relaxed. But just moments before, I was like, is this even going to work?
Yeah, no. That's just life. You have to adapt. You have to be adaptable here. What was I going to say? So what I was saying, hopefully this is all recorded and I can edit it so that
right.
it looks good.
But nah, we'll do it again. No big deal.
What type of, like, for someone to kind of come and maybe see this recording and maybe be on the fence about it, are you looking for someone who's maybe definite for that change, or are you looking for someone who is still a little bit on the fence, and, you know, you're still able to work with them over this program? Like, what type of person you're looking for, and what should they expect kind of following the program?
Well, in terms of looking, we you know, our objective is to reach as many people as possible that are over 40 that are struggling. Yeah. Sometimes people don't know why they're struggling or what they're looking for. They may not specifically be looking for a weight loss program or an anti-aging program or muscle building program. Certainly there are a large number of people that are, and they're the easiest to reach and the easiest to influence. But the difficult ones, the more challenging ones, are the ones who aren't sure what the problem is, why they're having difficulty, what their struggle really is. So sometimes you have to help define that for them. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was struggling early on, I didn't know, as a teenager, I didn't know what the resources were. I didn't know what my problem was. I just knew, you know what, if you'll excuse my, what they believe they need, and ultimately they do need it. They do need an exercise program. They do need, you know, a good nutrition program. Then they do need a good plan. But below that surface, or some might say above it, is the whole mindset, belief system, emotional component of it all. So that's where we really help people benefit for the most part.
Yeah, I guess I wanted to kind of sort of mention that as well, because I just believe if you are struggling, or you don't have that understanding of where you need to go or where to start, to think this is a really good way of doing it. Great, sir. I can't thank you enough for taking the time out and having this conversation with me. I think it's been really valuable, and being able to kind of learn more about you and your experiences, and obviously impact more of the world out there, you know.
Well, it's been my pleasure, without question. I love our conversation. I love that you're a fitness mindset guy yourself, and that you're doing this and you're actually working directly with people. I think, I mean, just that the whole one-on-one, it cannot be underestimated how the impact you can have on people, you know, just working with them one-on-one, you know, and reaching them on a larger scale is admirable, but just getting one-on-one and helping people understand how they can change, and they don't have to be in the same situation, the same predicament, the same challenge that they are in now. And you have that opportunity. And I want to let you know how much I appreciate that.
Awesome, my friend. Excellent. Look, I'm just going to sign off now. As I said, I really appreciate it. I'll be in touch, and I'm sure we'll meet again. I'll hopefully check the recording, man, and I'm going to have to edit or do something with it. I don't know. But
you're going to have to edit a little bit, I think. Yeah. And I hope you were going in and out a little bit on my last one. I was just, you know, sharing a little bit about what Max Mind Lean Body does and who we reach. Yes. and the impact. It looked like you were going in and out, but I hopefully we got it. Listen, if we need to do it again, we do it again. It's all about service to others. So you just let me know, my friend.
Awesome, buddy. Okay. Have a great day. I know you're really busy, but it was great talking to you, buddy.
You too. It was a pleasure. And I understood every word you said. I thought I might have a challenge with the accent, but not at all. Perhaps you didn't understand what I was saying. I don't know. It's possible.
No, it's all good. All good, my friend.
All right, Seamus.
Great.
Have a great day. Stay,
cheers.
Stay safe.
Yeah, same to you. Bye-bye. You know, man.